Atheist Nomads episode 408. What is faith?
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin.
I'm Lauren.
Yep, Lauren's here with me.
Hello.
And today, we've got a little bit of news, but not a whole lot. But we're going to get to that after a kind of combo, just dusting off the degree and casual discussion. Now, Lauren and I have already had this discussion several weeks ago, but it was a good one.
Rehashing it could change.
Yeah.
The conversation, though, because it's been long enough, and this question has been bothering me for about a month now.
Oh, wow. Still bothering you?
I mean, just once in a while, had a bit of a falling out with a family member on Facebook. He likes to post very philosophical questions. Well, posing philosophical questions, there's a lot to that.
Those questions are about as philosophical as this beer I'm drinking, which is Philosophy and Velocity East Coast Edition.
It sounds delicious, unlike the conversation I had with my cousin. Now, he likes to post these fake philosophy questions and watch, you know, the world burn in the comments section. And he posted a couple in a row, which was really weird. They were the same topic about what the definition of faith was. His claim is that, you know, faith is inevitable in all of human existence, in any human interaction. You need to have at least a smidgen of faith. Well, to me, that depends on how you define faith. He was defining it as basically the trust you have that certain things are going to turn out a certain way, or in any way. You have faith in the fact that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. You have faith in the planet is revolving around the sun. You don't know for sure, but you have faith in that. And to me, that just rubbed me the wrong way. Right. Because anybody's ever had an apologetic come up to you and question you about what the definition of faith is. What it is they claim that, well, this is a secular version of the definition of faith. You agree with that, right? And then the unknowing, you know, naive atheist was like, okay, yeah, I can agree with that. And they're like, ha, gotcha. So you have to admit that there are some things that you can't prove, that you have to just take on faith. And it's like, oh, wait a second, I can see where this is going. And they're like, therefore, you have to admit that, you know, God exists, basically, is like where that
it's
always inevitably leads.
If A equals B, then Z.
Exactly. That's not how that works.
You still need to go through all the other steps to get to Z.
When you're having a casual conversation with somebody, or if you're having a conversation with somebody like me who does not have a background in debate and does not know all the terms for all the logical fallacies off the top of their head.
Or much of a background in religion.
You get blindsided by this. And you're like, I know that's wrong, but I can't explain to you why you're wrong. So F you, I'm never going to talk to you again. Which is basically what happened on Facebook.
Yeah.
I took it personally because I saw his questions as a setup to him basically bringing in his Christianity. And I said, well, you know, you're not being honest with your questions here. It's not the question itself. It's the motive.
Right.
But that question of what is your definition of faith? What is the secular definition, which I guess is what he was claiming? What is the religious definition? Can you have it as an atheist? What is all that?
Right.
Man?
And for one, if you're talking about faith that the sun will rise in the morning and that the earth is going to continue to revolve around the sun, that is a matter of understanding cause and effect and momentum and physics.
Right. And that was, okay, so that was one example that I was seeing when I was looking this stuff up. Another one was you have to have faith in the scientists who are researching stuff, knowing that they are looking for a certain truth, capital T or not, depending on who you talk to. But if you don't have faith in those scientists, then they're never going to search for those answers, and we're going to never get any technological advancement. Which, of course, that's not how it works.
Right, because, of course, scientists are all fueled by the faith of the masses.
Right?
That's the juice that makes the science work.
That's not how that works. sure it's not some kind of faith vampire.
All right, so let's look at if it's somebody, a Christian saying, well, what is faith? The definition they're going to go with is the one that first always comes to mind for me, which is, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen.
Oh, that didn't sound practiced or quoted at all.
That's Hebrews 11:1. Okay. I memorized that probably when I was 10.
That's a pretty solid thing for something for a 10-year-old to like grasp onto. I get that.
Oh, it was part of Sabbath school class or my Adventist school that we all had to memorize that definition.
Right.
And it is one that I know I heard repeated all the time. I know I looked it up when I was studying and digging into epistemology. How do you know what you know? And why should we have faith? Of course, I looked into this all very deeply.
Right. Ooh, on a whole nother level than what most people do.
Right. Literally at the graduate level.
Yeah.
Graduate level study into it. Literally. And
versus this guy who was an atheist for a long time and then has recently found like having a coming to Jesus moment, is nominally Christian. Like, he is Christian, but not really like participating in any way. He just loves to float that around.
Just likes to fuck with people.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. All right. So if you go with the dictionary definitions instead, because, the Hebrews one is faith is believing in things that you don't have evidence for.
Right.
From a place of conviction.
Right. Not having, not trusting in people before you having been correct, but having this belief that this intangible something is true.
Yep. And a lot of Christians who are a little bit more thoughtful would even go further to say it's believing things that are not just, there isn't evidence for it, but as things that there can't be evidence for, you're believing things that are unknowable and just accepting and embracing the mystery. Not ghosts, but around God.
I know.
Then there's the dictionary definition, none of which are your relative's definition he was trying to go with. This is from Webster's Dictionary. Allegiance to duty or a person.
Okay, faithful servant.
So a synonym of loyalty.
Right.
An example for that would be lost faith in the company's president.
I love how I immediately went with faithful servant, even though it's like,
yeah,
no such thing, right?
Fidelity to one's promises and sincerity of intentions acted in good faith. So the loyalty. There is the second definition, which is belief and trust in and loyalty to God.
Okay. That's
such as the belief in the traditional doctrines of a religion, firm belief in something for which there is no proof, clinging to the faith that her missing son would one day return.
And if you talk to any atheist and say, do you believe in faith? That's the definition they're going to go. They're immediately going to think of. It's like, well, of course I don't. I'm a faithless person because I don't believe in God. It's like, well.
But firm belief in something for which there is no proof. I do not have a firm belief in things that don't have proof.
Some kind of proof. Some kind of evidence has to be.
I need proof of some. I need some proof to be able to believe in something.
Which is why we don't watch paranormal investigations.
Which, and also why I could never do paranormal investigation.
Of course, those people claim that they do have proof, but that's a whole other story.
Some of them claim that they do have proof. Then you have the skeptics who are trying their hardest not to say that it's all bullshit, but it's fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Complete trust. Then the third definition, something that is believed, especially with strong conviction, especially a system of religious beliefs, as in the Protestant faith.
Okay.
And then they have a separate entry for on faith, which would be without question or took everything he said on faith.
Yeah. So this little definition that my cousin had niched out wasn't any of those.
No. At the point that you're saying that, well, you must have faith if you believe that things that have been thoroughly proven are going to continue to happen.
Or not. Well, he was even going so far as to say things that have not been proven. Physics. You have to have faith in the standard model in order to investigate it.
Except
no,
you don't.
I don't. And they don't.
Yeah.
And what really pissed me off was then, of course, a bunch of back and forth on this one. between him and mostly non-religious friends. And then later posted a little thing, a cartoon about how when he makes this definition, the science-minded, quote, air quotes, science-minded friends are like, well, yeah, okay. And then he was showing him doing a little dance. And so I had to point out, I was like, oh, so you weren't here for actual discussion. You were trying to win.
Yeah.
Therefore, you had motive. Therefore, you're trying to do something here that is not benign.
Doing something in bad faith.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to point out to him that this is a setup.
Mm-hmm.
You are doing a setup, whether you mean to or not. He claimed he wasn't doing it, but...
Yeah.
And then within a couple posts was like, even, you know, and since you brought it up, this is the reason why, you know, I'm right and you're wrong. And I'm like, there you go. You just proved my point.
Well, and using the physicist and the standard model as an example, you know, the average layperson who has knowledge of the standard model does not need to have faith in the standard model, because whether or not we think that's valid is as relevant as whether or not you think your preferred brand of soap is the best.
Right.
It makes zero difference in your life.
Brand loyalty in physics.
For the physics studying it, either it's what's best fits the evidence as they see it, therefore not faith, or it's a matter of curiosity and trying to see if this is what will best fit the evidence. That's not faith.
Now, if you have this weird definition of faith where you include the curiosity as being a part of that,
then it's a meaningless definition.
Then that is a singular definition that nobody else uses, and you cannot be throwing that word around without stepping on some toes.
Right.
And he did. I kind of blew up at him, and then I went back and deleted all my comments and told him, you know, sorry I overreacted, but, you know, I don't agree with what you're doing here, and I'm not following you anymore. And then he went on to kept messaging about it for, 3 days? It was insane.
Yeah.
If people don't win an argument like that, they really don't like to let it go. Anyway.
All right. So now let's dig into really what is faith.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about capital F faith, not the colloquial use of faith as in the
fidelity or
I took it on faith or I lost faith in the company president. Those are the more colloquial terms, not the theological term. You're talking about the theological term faith. Even going with the Hebrews 1:1 definition, that is a great definition for the average layperson and probably most pastors, at least that they're going to use to describe to the average layperson. Once you get to about third year of undergrad theology, you start figuring out, no, it's not that simple.
Yeah. Once you start teasing it apart, it's like one of those like unending knots.
Because there is no universal definition of faith in Christianity.
Right. There's no universal definition for any words. I mean, that's the whole point of the dictionary,
right,
is trying to standardize that. This is a particularly sensitive one.
In fact, the core of the Protestant Reformation was over what faith is. Okay. A little more so, it was about salvation, and that was because they were all saying you are saved by faith. So to argue the point, they had to argue about what is faith. If you are saved by faith, then what is that faith? And the Catholics were saying that faith is your good works, proving your faith to God by doing good things or paying indulgences to the church.
Boo. That was not a popular one.
And Martin Luther said, no, faith is something that humans can't even give God. It's something that God gives to people. Whereas with the Catholic version, faith is something that you chose to have in God.
Okay. That's a huge schism.
That caused the Protestant Reformation, which was a massive schism with tens of or hundreds of millions of people killed.
So how do you defend the I can understand the Catholic side of that, where it's something you're basically, you know, you're trying to get on God's good side so you be a good person by being a faithful you know, believer. But what the other side of that, where it's God gives it to you, is that the this intangible connection that people seem to have?
No, that is predestination.
Oh, okay.
Which was better spelled out by John Calvin.
Okay.
And is often known as Calvinism.
Oh.
It is the viewpoint of most of your more conservative Baptists, or at least traditionally has been the viewpoint of Baptists.
It's all God's plan.
Presbyterians and Lutherans is God wills it. If God wills you to have faith and to be saved, God will give you faith and you will be saved. If God wills you to be damned, then God will not give you faith.
Why? Never mind that. But why? Anybody get behind a religion like that?
So then there was the... Oh, I'm blanking on which theologian was behind it. But then there was, out of the Netherlands, there was a free will Protestant tweak on it, where you are not saved by works, like the Catholics say, that's still wrong, but you are saved by choosing as a free moral agent to believe in God.
Okay.
And the reason why, and here's where it gets kind of tricky, is it's all about agency. In the Calvinistic viewpoint, it is humans do not actually have agency.
They have no control over this.
We have no
whatsoever.
Control.
God's figured this all out, set something in motion, and knows exactly how it's going
to
end.
And there's a quota of people who need to be in heaven, and there's a quota of people who need to keep the fires of hell burning.
What the fuck? What the fuck? Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't like that one.
They believed, the belief was that there was a heaven and a hell. They got rid of purgatory. They viewed purgatory as being, not making any sense, but they didn't get rid of hell.
Purgatory doesn't make sense. And you just look at the rest of it, you're like, what?
Now, they were...
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Unitarians, or excuse me, the Universalists.
Early.
So not the Unitarians, the Universalists, who they then ended up merging. Even though a lot of Unitarians were Universalists in the early... Yeah, but the Universalists, they took that a step further of, yes, God chooses, you don't have a say in the matter. And there is no hell, and everybody's going to heaven.
That makes sense, kind of. That makes more sense to me. That if I were a god that was mm-hmm. decided to create this tiny little colony of, you know, rabbit breeding, infestive little things, I wouldn't want to say, well, okay, what was it, 1,400 of them can go to this special place, and the rest of you just burn in hell for eternity?
144,000.
Nobody thinks that way, unless you're a freaking psychopath.
Yeah.
Which, of course, God would be if you were real.
Mm-hmm. But so they were all in
Everybody goes to heaven. You just try to be a good person, right?
But each of these movements was in their time and place in history with the theological milieu of the era and the geography.
Calvinism
because
is so hot right now.
Because if you left central Germany and you traveled about 500 miles to the southeast at that point, you'd be in Ottoman territory.
Oh, right.
And the Muslims would have told the Calvinists, you're right, but you're also going to hell because God wills it and you're not a Muslim.
There you go. That, I mean, makes as much sense as anything else.
Muslims also believe that there is no choice. God wills it. God chooses what happens in life. Whatever happens, God wills it. They are strict, hard determinist, traditionally. There is always going to be variation in modern times,
so
but traditionally...
No, there's no real conversion. It's you're either born to all believe in that or you weren't. Or God chooses you to change your mind,
yes.
life, or not.
There is you can convert to Islam, but nobody can leave Islam and convert to something else. Because other belief systems are wrong. Those are not the followers of the true God. Everybody who is born into Islam, God chose them to be born in the path that will lead to paradise.
Right.
And everybody else is not going to paradise.
Which is the argument I used to use in high school for, you know, all these, you know, idiot teenagers. It was like, well, what if you were born, was it? I calculated it once. It was something like 8 hours later, where the earth had turned a certain way. You would be born in a different time, slightly different time and place. You would have been a Muslim. Do you think that your convictions would just be as strong as a Muslim as they are now as a Christian? Well, yeah. Does that mean all Muslims are wrong? No, it means everybody's wrong.
Yeah. And if you were to talk to a Hindu, the idea of faith is irrelevant. It's all about karma.
Right.
But if you talk to
existence is just a never ending toil and
yeah,
pain and suffering.
And to Buddhists, if you talk to a Buddhist monk, it doesn't have to do with faith. It's meditation and oneness.
Yeah.
Separating from the physical realm.
Which is why idiots on Facebook can't go wrong and using the word faith in such mm-hmm. a loaded manner, because that definition that they're trying to prove only works in a certain percentage of Western civilization. Eye roll.
Yeah. So if we bring it back to the Christian versions of it, within the Bible, both actually make sense. Where Luther was arguing from was that in Paul's writings, and in both the actual Pauline writings and the counterfeit Pauline writings right. that are in the Bible, that Paul said that you can only be saved by faith, and that there's nothing that humans can do that are good enough to earn salvation. The Catholics, okay, their viewpoint has nothing to do with the Bible.
It's
tradition.
Right.
And dogma. The free will Protestant viewpoint is, it comes from kind of combining all of those, and there's stories in the Gospels about people coming to that moment of faith, and it's easy to make sense of that as you get to choose at that point. Now, what all of these have to deal with, and there have been interesting ways throughout time for people to deal with it, is the geography problem. To a hardcore Calvinist, the fact that somebody was born Muslim in Turkey doesn't bother them. God chose that person to be damned and to help fuel the fires of hell.
Gotta stay warm somehow.
Yeah. To a free will Protestant, that brings a problem when you look at the world as if you're born in, you know, 1700 in Boston, Massachusetts, you're going to be Congregationalist. If you're born in London, you're going to be Anglican. If you're born in France, you're going to be Catholic. Where's the choice?
Right. I mean, some could argue that you could choose to not believe, but that's not how that works either.
No.
It's not that you can choose which path you want to be faithful. You either believe it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try and force yourself to change your mind, but you're not going to.
Adventist had an interesting solution to it of they had a doctrine of, and still kind of do, even though it's mostly faded, of present truth, where the Reformation, the Catholics perverted the church so much. If only they knew about all the kid fucking, that the perversion was actually literal too. They perverted the church so much that no one reformer could take it far enough. And so God was allowing them, you know, only holding them to the standard of what they knew, and then would only take them a few steps further. And then the next reform would take them a few steps further.
I can see that. Like, leaving the oven on, walking out of the room, and coming back. So, oh shit, it's on fire. Okay, let's slowly turn it down.
Well, okay,
the humans have really fucked this one up. Okay, let's, little bits, baby steps.
This is the standard principle of progress. If you want...
Which is the only way that you can explain any kind of modern reformation in any mm-hmm. church. LDS do it, Catholics do it, Adventists do it, mm-hmm. where they have updated rules all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's like women's ordination is like, that's suddenly okay when it hasn't been forever.
Now,
well, some would claim that that's getting back to a more perfect
and present truth in the world that we live in now, that didn't make sense back then. But that is possible now because women weren't educated or couldn't be educated back then, but they can be now. So it makes sense. And you could even make the argument that 35 years ago, women weren't even legal persons, and now they are.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Wow.
But the Adventist present truth principle has extended into how to deal with the geography problem of people who haven't heard of Jesus, haven't been presented the gospel.
They can't go to hell if they haven't even know that there's a church.
Well, Adventists also don't believe
in hell.
Punishment hell.
Okay.
The hellfires will be quenched. They will not keep burning. They will burn up everyone up, and then they're all the bad people up, and then they're done. Interestingly, Ellen White, in one of her visions, had Napoleon as one of that the amount of time that you would burn had to deal with how evil you were. And she saw Napoleon burning in the hellfires, and he took the longest of the humans.
Well, she really did not like Napoleon, huh?
Oh, she wrote a lot about how evil the French Revolution was.
Okay.
Yeah. The whole thing with liberty and reason.
Fuck those ideals.
Secularism? Gross.
Nope, just hit yourself in the head with a rock. You'll be fine.
But the view is that you're judged based on what you know. And so somebody born in Istanbul in 1600 would not have learned about Christianity and Jesus. Therefore, if that person did well with the light that was available, then that person will get salvation. That person was a good Christian without even knowing it.
Okay. Okay. That's a nice backpedal there.
They also use it as, because you can't just have something nice. You also have to have an evil twist to it.
Right.
And their evil twist to it is, so don't fuck up evangelism and mission work, because if you present Christ's message wrong, then people will be judged against that light.
Nice.
And you'll have sent them to hell.
What if you're an island of untouched peoples who decide to kill the missionary?
Mm-hmm.
I say good for them.
In that idea, they're all damned. So, the concept of faith, like I know I experience my own experience, and as I was studying it, I was getting to live it as I couldn't believe. And it was actually reading a Calvinist book arguing against, and this was so weird to have as a textbook in a class. It was an Adventist seminary. And we had to read a Calvinist book that was written in response to a Catholic book.
Oh, boy.
We didn't read the original book. And the author of the book was arguing from a Calvinist perspective. And as I was reading through it, I was like, oh, shit, this absolutely makes sense. Because he broke out faith into different levels of faith, the most basic of which is the faith of assent. That is the subconscious point in your brain where
something clicks.
Your subconscious either allows you to consider that something is true, might be true, or isn't true. And nobody in their
feeling, the most basic subconscious feeling.
The if at that level you believe something is not true, you cannot possibly will yourself into believing it is true.
Yeah.
And I was reading that and living that I couldn't believe Christianity was true. I wanted to. I was trying to will myself to. I was trying to have faith. It just wasn't there. And that basic faith of assent, yeah, if you want to have a meaningful discussion about faith, you got to cover that.
Yeah.
A lot of people, the colloquial term for it is the bullshit detector.
We all have one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When your bullshit detector says that's bullshit, you cannot believe it's true. It's impossible. Now, it could be possible for you to be slowly convinced that it is true.
That's why, I mean, you can be educated in a certain way, taught, and something in you will flip and you will believe, you can believe or disbelieve if somebody...
My bullshit detector went off like crazy watching Bill Nye as a kid talking about evolution, rejecting everything he said about evolution. Years later, as I slowly learned things that eroded my view that Earth was 6,000, that the universe was 6,000 years old and created in its entirety in 7 days, and that slowly whittled away, and different pieces got older and older, and more pieces got older and more pieces got older. And then it was just like, and then it was finally, I was at the Field Museum in Chicago in the Our Evolving World exhibit. I was there for the King Tut exhibit. But I'd already driven all the way to Chicago from Southwest Michigan. I'd already paid for parking. So my classmate and I who were going through it, we got extra credit. Graduate courses should not have extra credit. That just doesn't really make sense.
Not really, not unless you have a very biased teacher.
Yeah, it was weird. But walking through that exhibit, I saw the story of evolution from start to finish and was like, oh, it's... It actually all does make sense. I'd also just been through the Issues and Origins class at the seminary where I became thoroughly convinced that creationist arguments against evolution did not make any sense.
Okay, so that got whittled away, and then you were able to see it with kind of a fresh perspective,
mm-hmm.
and that blew it out of the water.
And then I was able to accept that it was true. But if you had told 17-year-old me stuff that I believe now about evolution, I would have said, no, that's bullshit. That's not possible.
Yeah.
I couldn't have willed myself to accept evolution at that point, just like I couldn't will myself to accept creationism now.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about the torment that people have when they come to the realization that they don't fit in their church anymore for some reason,
mm-hmm.
You think that people would just choose to, okay, just stick with it. And the problems will go away. The doubts will go away. That's true in everything. You're stuck in a job that you're not happy with. It's hard to will yourself to enjoy that job.
Right.
If you feel like you are attracted to, the quote unquote wrong gender, then you can't just will that away. People have been trying for,
mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands of years and it doesn't work. So, yeah. Trying to convince somebody else to just take you for your word isn't going to work.
So, the Calvinists are wrong in that there is no God willing people to be damned, and there are no hellfires that need to be fueled. And I don't know that anyone would actually use that metaphor, but that's the best metaphor for it. And the free will group is wrong because free will is a theological construct, not a scientific one.
Right. Yeah. And oftentimes when you speak of free will, it's used colloquially, like you have the choice to eat meat or not eat meat. That is free will. But when you consider socioeconomic background, education, your physical, what you're physically going through, mm-hmm. is that truly a choice, or was that something that you were already kind of set up for?
What options do you have at your local grocery store?
Even that, yeah.
What
do you have one?
Information are the algorithms on the internet filtering towards you?
Yeah. I could not be convinced to be vegetarian. It doesn't work for me. That's the bullshitometer is going off big time. But I can't be convinced to cut down and or stop eating meat due to other factors. That's not free will so much as mm-hmm. just, choosing what's available.
Yeah.
Based on, the things you care about. In this case, environment, economy, ecology, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And when the belief in whether or not there's a free will has major ramifications in our society with crime and punishment.
Yeah, it's kind of our thing. We glorify the Wild Wild West revenge justice motif. And there's very little people trying to stand up for the perspective of rehab versus punishment,
mm-hmm.
because this country is obsessed with punishment because you chose to do something wrong.
Yeah. That is based on a particular free will Christian theology that is particularly weird and twisted.
Some people choose to do, if they were given a choice between doing A or B, they're going to go with B, and they're going to have to pay the consequences of that, knowing what the consequences could mm-hmm. be. But that's not the same as, the mass incarceration of African-American yeah. men or...
Okay, then you can also get it with from the predestination viewpoint of, those people were just damned to spend their life in prison because God chose it, and that's why they were born black.
Yo, wow, yeah, let's not touch on that one.
Like, ugh. You can...
That why do you think white supremacy is so popular here right now?
And especially in places that have been heavily Calvinistic.
Mm.
The South has traditionally been Baptist. The Baptist Church has traditionally been Calvinistic. God chooses the order of things. Northerners trying to go against God's will is wrong.
But if that were true, then why punish anybody who does wrong if it was God's will?
Well, if your God's a dick who's willing people to burn in hell, why not?
Why not lynch? Why not?
Yeah.
Death row. Makes sense.
Punishment also makes sense in a free will model because it's the deterrent. Right. It's you punish people who do wrong, light punishments for people who do a little wrong so they don't do it again, and steep punishments for people who do big wrongs so that other people won't.
How's that working out for us?
Yeah.
Overall, you could say, you know, for the, I guess it kind of works. Most kids are pretty scared out of their mind to go against the rules until they're pretty old.
Highest incarceration rate in the world.
But there's obviously reasons to do bad things that have not been considered in the justice system.
Right. Like the reasonable viewpoint on concepts like faith and free will and whatnot is the more scientific viewpoint, which is all humans are the product of their genetics and the environment in which they are raised, and their actions will be determined by their background, psychology, and biology.
Right. So as a rehabber, you'd want to go back to, if you know, any source of trauma, bad coping mechanisms. You want to undo past damage so that the person can live in society.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the, well, that person did wrong, so let's just put them on the table and shoot some poison in them. Sorry. Not big on the death row thing.
Right, but. Right. Now, then there is a secular argument for certain people who have committed heinous enough crimes, like serial killers, to be executed, because you could argue that it is inhumane to keep somebody in prison for life.
Right, which is, yeah.
And that is somebody who is not, there is something seriously wrong with either that person's biology or psychology, and that person cannot, is not compatible with living in society.
Like most Catholic bishops or priests.
Yeah. It's not most, but enough.
Okay. True. Yeah. That was a general statement. But yeah.
It's all tied in, though. It's all connected. Viewpoints on what faith is determines how many people spend ridiculously long times in prison who shouldn't have.
Yeah. It still blows my mind that people get put on death row and have been, you know, killed, who have been later been proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait, how did you get on death row if there was any doubt? That's insane.
Yeah.
But there is a certain deep psychological carnal pleasure that people get out of seeing people get punished,
mm-hmm.
whether they deserve it or not.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. We can't deny, we cannot say that we're above that. We're not. Schadenfreude is the light term, but
all you have to do
is, some people revel in punishment.
All you have to do is look at popular entertainment. I'm not talking about any particular show, but there is punishment and suffering and,
well, every sport is set up for that.
Yep.
And just about any comedy, drama, anything like that. The only thing I can really think of that doesn't really do that is music. Lyricless music.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you throw lyrics in, it's just like, oh, well, okay.
All right. I think we've covered this one sufficiently.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple news stories I want to get through.
Okay.
This will be quick. For people not from the UK, what I'm about to say is shocking.
Okay.
On numerous levels. So prepare yourself.
Okay.
A Liberal Democrat peer in the House of Lords, which is a statement that should not be possible.
A Liberal Democrat in the House of Lords?
Who is a peer in the House of Lords. That should not be a possible thing. Liberal Democrats should not be compatible with a House of Lords.
Yep. Just let that one slide.
Or being peers of the realm.
Liberal within their system.
Okay. This bill, which it's also kind of not common for bills to originate in the House of Lords. The House of Lords traditionally grants assent and rubber stamps or returns bills that come from the House of Commons.
Right.
This is one that this member of the House of Lords feels strongly enough about to sponsor a bill. It would replace mandatory, compulsory community worship at all schools in England and Wales, to schools that are not religiously affiliated, to have assemblies that are inclusive of all students, regardless of their religion or belief systems.
Yeah. So here in the U.S., people are constantly fighting to get prayer back in school,
mm-hmm.
because that was taken out.
Yeah.
That never happened in the U.K.
In 1944, A law was passed that required worship services in all schools, Christian worship services in all schools in the country.
So this is like an anti-communist thing, or?
It was kind of a getting through World War II thing.
Yeah.
The end of the war. And then with devolution happening with Scotland and Northern Ireland getting their own parliaments, they passed their own laws to do the same thing. And fixing this won't fix those.
Taken down.
England has reached the point, the UK has reached the point where a majority of people are not religiously affiliated or don't even identify with any religion. This is a change.
So praying to the state, you know, to the state Church of England.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense for the majority of people going to school there.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, half the people or more in England who identify as Christian only do so because the Church of England is, well, they're British, therefore they're part of the Church of England.
It's de facto.
It's de facto. Got baptized there, had their kids baptized there, got married there, had their parents' funerals there. Like, it served a purpose doing these community things as a branch of the government to deal with the community touchy-feely stuff. And take care of all the old buildings.
Because like the rest of, you know, England, the government does not like to acknowledge feelings. Yeah. Stiff upper lip, guys. Stiff upper lip.
Yeah, and this bill was drawn 9th in a ballot of private members' bills on May 14, which means it will probably actually get debated during the session.
Oh, wow.
I think that means it's 9th on the calendar.
Okay.
This is one that realistically will probably pass. Okay, conservatives have maintained control of the House of Commons. We'll see, but...
Now, I'm curious as to how white... Well, we're assuming it's widespread because it does dictate that all... schools do this compulsory,
mm-hmm.
you know, congregational meeting, basically. But how many schools just kind of don't do it?
Quite a few.
And how many people in the UK were actually forced to pray?
Quite a few.
So that would be, I don't know if we have any listeners in the UK, but I would love to hear the background there.
We do. We do have listeners in the UK.
So, yeah. What do you think about this?
Was it 60 or 70 of you? Should respond with what was it like using the SpeakPipe link on the website.
Because us in the U.S., that's just something we never had.
Yeah. Well, I did because I went to a religious school. You went to a
religious school. And even in the U.K., they were going to...
And this... Now, the U.K. also has a weird system where because of the Reformation being super messy there with, you know, killing kings and civil war and... revolution and exiling kings and all the back and forth that happened there.
Great drama.
There are state schools that are Catholic, and there are state schools that are theoretically secular. This would only apply to the state schools that are secular.
Right. They're not going to take prayer away, take it out of the religious schools. They're just taking it out of the secular ones.
Yes.
Okay.
Even if they are state run and funded.
Yeah, right.
And secular private schools that are currently required to have these services, one wouldn't be required anymore to have those.
Right.
Because it was a requirement for all schools.
Assemblies. Ugh.
So, yeah, this is a nice step to see happening in a country that really needs to get over its past. Like, respect the people that you are now. You don't need to be stuck on what were you in the past.
Yeah.
And in the U.S., the Secular Coalition of America, along with American Humanist Association, American Atheist Center for Inquiry, Ex-Muslims of North America, and Freedom from Religion Foundation, had a meeting with the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships on Friday, May 14.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and they talked with the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships on how we can do better to uphold the rights of secular Americans.
Okay,
so
yep.
Non-religious people. And this was the first meeting like that. And they have encouraged the White House to continue engaging with organizations representing non-religious Americans, and also to engage with local secular organizations around the country like they do with churches for the faith-based and neighborhood partnerships.
Right. Well, maybe they should just, you know, get rid of that.
That would also be good.
Why not just have labels community partnerships? That'd be great.
The White House Office of Neighborhood Partnerships.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah,
do it.
Now they are saying that this did represent that the current holder of head of that office is displaying that they're open to embracing pluralism, diversity of thought, and the secular community, and it is a nice change from the last administration.
Everything's a perky, lovely, sunshiny change from the last administration. It may not get what we want out of this one, but
okay, if you
opening
think
the dialogue, at least it gives us a chance to actually have some growth.
And I wouldn't say it's everything's a perky change from the last administration, but we'll hold
there
on.
There's some stuff that has stayed.
We'll put a pin in that one. Another Canadian judge has now ordered a church to be shut down because they are continuing to ignore COVID restrictions.
Dragging everyone down, aren't they?
As a result, the Mounties have put locks around the doors and not allowing anybody to enter Almer's Church of God in Ontario.
Yikes.
Yeah. They
like the province?
The province of Ontario, yes.
Like, is there a city this happened in? Or, I mean, that's a pretty big area.
Okay, it is huge. I don't know the city.
I'm sorry, that was just a weird...
This article doesn't have the city.
Well, journalism, come on. But okay, hey Canada, apparently you're just provinces. It's all Arctic anyway, right? It's just all
right,
mounties and
let's
moose.
Let's follow the link to the CBC.
So busy playing hockey, they can't go to church anyway. A joke. I love Canada. I wish they'd let us in. It's getting too damn hot here in Boise. I need to go north.
Maybe it's in London, Ontario.
Okay.
Maybe.
That would have also been confusing, so maybe they decided to leave.
Oh, no. Almer, Ontario.
Oh, okay. Almer is the name of this. Not the church, but the town that the church...
The town, Almer, Ontario's Church of God.
Egg in my face. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. Anyway, the judge also fined the church $35,000, fined the head pastor $10,000, and the assistant pastor $3,000.
Nice.
So, yeah. Follow the rules if you're in Canada. In the U.S. now, what are the rules?
For the most part, it's not that complicated. If you're vaccinated, you can stop wearing masks and go about your daily life. If you have not been vaccinated, still wear your mask and keep 6 feet away.
It's not quite that simple. It's because if you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and it's a place that has relaxed restrictions, then you can just go about your day.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
But that is important that because like Oregon is
some places that have not
is not lifting restrictions. The restrictions until vaccination rates get higher. Whereas Boise lifted the restrictions because...
They don't want the city of Boise to burn.
Well,
torches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously, the people here are messed up.
Most are good.
Just like vaccination, it's just those few that's dragging everyone else down.
Yeah. And it's definitely most of the people in Boise are good and doing fine. A lot of the worst ones are people who are coming from neighboring cities.
Yeah.
And for our final story, for an update on the... situation with Israel and Gaza and the West Bank and East Jerusalem, it is bad and getting worse.
It's peachy here where I'm from, where I'm at, which is my head in the sand. So
yeah.
It's great.
There are drivers getting pulled out of their cars and beat by mobs and cars getting hit with rocks. Now, when I was in Jerusalem,
and also, targeted areas getting bombed.
I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Okay.
When I was in Jerusalem, I did run into the, we were trying to leave downtown West Jerusalem to get back to our hotel in East Jerusalem, and the Jewish cab drivers would not take us to our hotel. We had to get an Arab cab driver to take us there because the Jewish driver said they were afraid that their cars would get stoned. That is actually happening now.
Yeah. Well, obviously it happened then too.
It happens when things get bad. It doesn't happen when things are good. Things were questionable when I was there because Hamas had just seized control of the Gaza Strip, and they were in the middle of the 40th year anniversary of seizing East Jerusalem.
Right.
So this is now... So yeah, that's happening. Hamas is firing off rockets, continuing to fire off rockets into a couple of Jewish cities.
Just randomly.
And Israel is bombing Gaza back into the Stone Age.
Yeah. Not great.
The list of casualties, mostly civilian, include things like one of the handful of neurologists in one of the most densely packed places on Earth.
It would be different if this was some little podunk town, but it's not. There's a lot of people crammed into that little space.
And completely isolated from the world.
So they have their own doctors, their own neurologists, yeah. Their own physicists, their own everything.
They have one fewer neurologist now.
Well, that sucks.
The houses are getting bombed. Transportation tunnels are being destroyed. The International Media Center got bombed. Like, Israel is destroying Gaza. And that sucks. And anybody who does not think that situation is apartheid
needs to look up the definition of apartheid first.
Look up
a, you don't understand, you don't get it.
When I was there, we did a hike up the Mount of Olives, up from the old city into a very Palestinian neighborhood. And we went past the Jewish cemetery and then a Russian Orthodox church, and then it was just an Arab neighborhood. Very Arab neighborhood. And from there, the view towards the old city and West Jerusalem. Okay. That's all just wide open. There's the old walls. Those are historical. You look the other way. Oh, shit. There's a brand new giant wall trying to divide Israel from the West Bank. But the wall's in the West Bank.
Yeah. Already here.
It's in the occupied territories. You can't look at that and not see it's an apartheid system. And you can't look at this bombing and the asymmetrical handling of the situation and no, this is completely fucked up.
What does the U.S. say about that?
Well, Joe Biden is calling for a ceasefire. He is finally fully calling for a ceasefire.
Okay.
However, in the U.N. Security Council, the U.S. has blocked now three times a Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire.
Yep, and that's where words mean nothing.
Yep. Ah, man. All right, so that's it for news. In feedback from Lullaby2 via Discord, listening to 406, sorry to hear Lauren is taking a break distancing herself from the show.
No.
She was a fun addition.
Okay. I'm not distancing myself. It's not like I don't want to be associated with you and your project here. I just, from day to day, can't tell if I'm going to be in the mood for it or not.
Yeah. This is one of those things that I have been trying to reduce, take the podcast away from being a source of pressure on you, who
it
are...
It got to the point where about every Tuesday, Dustin would say, okay, don't forget there's recording tonight, and I would audibly sigh, roll my eyes, and like not be up for it. That's not good for either of us. It's like tonight where I'm actually, you know, doing well, have... You know, and crab myself full of Oreo milkshake, then okay.
But yeah, it's lowering the pressure by, again, I never said Lauren's not going to be a part of the show. I said she's moving from co-host to semi-regular guest. Maybe regular guest. So the expectation won't be every week, but sometimes.
Yep.
And it works best when you can join when you want to rather than when you have to, so that I'm not just sitting in the dark drinking beer talking into a microphone.
Yeah, that's all you really want. I know it is.
Not alone.
You can't get away with it anymore. I used to come home and all the lights would be off and he'd be in his corner drinking, recording. It's like, oh boy, we need to open the windows. Now you have a toddler throwing toys at you.
Yeah, and then there was another question from Lullaby on Discord. So are you going to get a new co-host? If I were to find the right person to become a co-host, that is something I would consider. I have been through several co-hosts. Lauren has, I think, kind of became a... I think Lauren was never really an official co-host, more a de facto co-host.
I think I called myself co-host once or twice, but... It was only because I lived here.
Yeah, you live here and there's a microphone here for you. But...
And I make snide comments all the time while he's recording. I might as well put them on the microphone.
So like a lot of longtime podcasters who have had co-hosts come and go, it is comforting to have that ease of routine scheduling. It is also difficult to find the right person who's the right fit for the risk involved.
Well, this is a long-term podcast that's been yours 100% all the way. It's hard for a co-host, anybody, to slip into that.
Yeah.
Without messing up stuff like scheduling and settings and all sorts mm-hmm. of stuff. But yeah. If anybody's interested, this first co-host was just a fan.
Yeah.
So.
From the blog.
From the blog, yeah.
I am not taking applications, but... If you want to join in on a discussion, let me know and I'll be sure. They'll help remind me to make sure that my phone is charged up when we're recording to run Discord on.
Is it?
It's too low on battery to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. From Mrs. Bates Motel on Discord. and Mrs. Bates Motel, I am 99.999% positive that is a reference to the Alfred Hitchcock movie, and big fan of Alfred Hitchcock movies.
But...
And that 0.001% is about the Bates Motel in Vail, Oregon.
I'm sure there are Bates Motels elsewhere. The one in Vail, Oregon is this little, like, run-down, dumpy little motel out in the...
It's the motel.
In the tiniest town.
1,600 people, 1,800 now, I think.
I've always wanted to go there for Halloween to watch Psycho
and
the Bates Motel.
I've stayed there once or twice. If you have any association with that hotel, please do let me know. That'd be awesome.
Are you kidding? If you have an association with Vail, let us know. We want to talk.
Anyway, the message was, just listened to 407. Dustin, I so appreciate your unwavering stance on Richard Dawkins and trans rights. with a blue heart and a heart pulse emoji.
Aw.
Thank you. You are so far the only person to give a completely supporting response on that. So thank you, Mrs. Bates Motel.
Just because you're atheist doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, 100% behind trans rights. That's a pretty strong stance to go on.
I've now gotten...
But solidify that and stick with it.
I've now gotten 4 total responses. One compared me to Trump voters. One seemed to be supporting and recognizing is asking for how to proceed with the problematic nature of Dawkins now versus his writings. And then now your response. And our next feedback, which is... our most recent Apple Podcast review. Which it turns out
not one of the ones you've forgotten.
Which means I haven't which as it turns out, I haven't looked at in a year. So I have all of the last years. So from Dan Tuck 7, Dawkins. Remember, this old guy had a stroke about 2 years ago.
Yep.
Yes. Having a stroke
might explain his behavior a little.
Is tragic. It explains his loss of filter. It may explain him going kind of being a little more regressive. It does not excuse it.
True. With a statement like that, you can't tell if they're inferring that it excuses it or explains it.
All right. From Joe J in February of this year, needs improvements. I like the content they put out and the guest. However, it's better when his better half is on or he has someone to interact with. Also, when he is just giving what's in the news stuff, he tends to run the stories together without letting the listeners know he has switched to another story, so you have to rewind sometimes to check, or you get really confused.
This was like the light bulb turns on kind of moment when I heard him say that, because I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. But the editing process that Dustin uses truncates silence.
Mm-hmm.
So what I hear him talking, there's long pauses in between each story, both as he's gathering the information up and also to built in a break. But the editing will cut that out. So I can understand how listening to it, it may seem a little abrupt. And we are trying to work on that. As for the better half, well, they call me the better half for a reason.
We're
talking about Rocco Taco and he's passed out on the couch.
So what I plan on doing in the future is using the bumper more. When it's just me, I am going to try to do better at getting more Dustin off the degrees and making sure that I always have one when it's just me, keep the number of news stories shorter and the episode shorter when it's just me, and do a bumper between each story.
Yeah, it's not going to be the same twangy guitar. That would be confusing, but even just a tone would work.
One thing worth keeping in mind is this is episode 408. There have, up at this point, probably been maybe 15 episodes that I have been alone for. Maybe 15 out of 408. The style I have developed for podcasting is conversational, where I have a conversation with someone. Even if I'm doing most of the talking, it's still a conversation with someone. It is very different to be podcasting solo. Anyway, appreciated. It also helped point out that even when Lauren is at her most tired, she brings value to the show.
Aw, yeah. Thank you. Because, you know, when I'm most tired, I feel like I'm dragging it down. So that's maybe I should just step off for a while, not drag you down. But you don't present facts in a factual manner to just present facts. You are presenting news and tidbits of information to have a discussion about.
Yeah.
Whether it's just mumbling or not. And that was actually good feedback. It's some of the best feedback I think we've had on the show. Like, most constructive.
And
February.
Anyway, from Flip Flapping Flopper Face.
Oh, that's fun.
Back in August, Dustin and Lauren are great. Kylie, too. From Haupu, always, and this is back in April of last year. Always a good podcast. It's always good to listen to your podcast. Your view on social norms are good. Don't stop this cast. I like listening to you both. Thanks.
Nice.
Thank you for leaving those reviews. But if you want to get us timely feedback, please use the contact form or the SpeakPipe button. Or you can email us at feedback@atheistnomads.com. And if you want to support the show, you can find out how at atheistnomads.com/donate. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
And remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.